Talk given Sunday, 28th November, 1976. The peak point of the religious life, the true fruition of man as man, a human being, is the state of communion. A constant state of perpetual communion, which has no limited, fixed meaning or specialized pattern. It is a state of being in which there is the full realization of what is called the Unio Mystica in the great mysticisms of the world, which is called Samadhi in India, in both Hindu and Buddhistic teachings. It is the state where you, the person, are not out of joint, out of tune, out of rhythm with the universal creative rhythm. That is the state of meditation. As you will see, its meaning is quite different from the meaning which you will find in any dictionary, in any language, where it is defined as musing or paying attention to a particular subject, a particular problem, or whatever it may be. Because in paying attention to the particular, if you look carefully into your own mental process, you will see that it is wholly self-oriented. And this self-orientation is the very denial of the state of complete union. It is not a union of oneself and another, whether that other is called God or Christ or Buddha or the totality or the absolute or anything. If all these are projected out of the mind as something separate from us, then they are the products of the brain, not of pure mind. And as such, what the person realizes through this activity born of this projection is just a wish fulfillment which he mistakes for meditation, for samadhi, for the Unio Mystica. As and when it takes place, there is only the union, the unbroken holiness of the total reality. Therefore, there is no intrusive I consciousness, a separative I consciousness upon this unity. Obviously, that which comes into being through the unhindered, unresisted activity of pure mind, which is the creative energy of the universe, creative action in eternity. Whatever comes into being through that activity is something which is entirely given unto us. What have we done to have it given unto us? We have ceased to resist it, to obstruct it, either through the processes of the conscious mind, let me say, the processes of the brain rather than mind, the processes of the brain, the conscious processes, or the hidden processes, the unconscious processes. We must distinguish clearly between brain and mind. Here again, we have to look at the meaning of the word mind in a way which is considerably different from the meaning of mind in the dictionary. The word mind is used to designate this creative energy, this transcendent creative energy. In theistic religions, we postulate the mind of God, and God remains undefined. It has to. Wheresoever the word God gets defined, that is a useless projection out of man's mind, out of man's brain, and as such is not anything which can tune in with the reality for which that word God, as long as it is undefined, stands. The mind of God in activity conceives, and that conception is the whole cosmos. That activity releases cosmos out of chaos. Chaos, in its original real meaning, is not disorder. Chaos is order in the state, universal order, in the state of quiescence, of peace. Not static, it is vibrant all the time. But it hasn't formed shapes. And through this creative activity of the mind of God, out of that chaos is shaped into cosmos. Therefore, cosmos is order in movement. Chaos is order which is pure vibration in stillness, in peace and quiescence. Now you see the relationship of these These are, after all, only concepts. When we talk of it, we can't avoid that. You see the relationship of these concepts. A one total reality which remains transcendent always, as far as our brain perceptions are concerned. All our feelings, sensations, ideas, systems of philosophy, whether they be religious philosophies or purely intellectual philosophies, whatever they are, they can never contain this transcendent reality as such. The brain is responsible for all these formulations. Now, what does the brain stand for? What does it represent actually? I mentioned brain specifically because it is the central controlling organ of the whole psychophysical organism, which is oneself, the man, John Smith or Mary Brown or whoever it is. The brain is the product of the changes which have taken place in the becoming process for about 3 or 4 million years as far as the human race is concerned. It represents all the conditioning of those 3 or 4 million years. It is not energy acting in freedom. It is energy which is under constraint and suffers the limitations of that constraint. It is conditioned. It is the controlling organ of the psychophysical person, you or I, who has in him all the natural drives, his inheritance through natural evolution. Over this we have no control. We have not had any control. It is also, the brain is also the receptacle, the storehouse of our specialized socio-cultural conditioning. And this, as you know, is different in different parts of the world. The different races, those in Africa, in Australia, in Europe, in America, those Asia, those which belong to a distant past, and those which exist today, they all have a different socio-cultural influence conditioning them. Now the brain represents all this. All its thinking, its conceiving, is an activity which is determined from the past. It is confined within the sphere of ambivalence. We use the term my mind or your mind. It would clarify matters if we dropped the possessive pronoun. There is, in fact, only mind, universal mind. limitless, utterly pure, unconditioned. It is extremely important to get the feel of this. As I say these words, listen with your brain quiet, and you will find an extraordinary activity of transformation taking place inside, so that understanding emerges. This thing, mind, is transcendent. And being transcendent, characterless, without beginning, without ending, it is free of space and time and limitation, either imposed from an outside, which in this case is non-existent, or through self-constriction. See, we use the word transcendent, and we haven't the vaguest feel of the reality of transcendence. I'm trying to suggest, through words and concepts, something which will awaken this dormant power of transcendence within all of us. So this is mind. There is only the one mind, just as there is only the one space as we see it. I qualify it by saying as we see it, because space is a little bit less, little bit more constricted than mind is. Akasha, mind space, is something very much freer than space, disha, in the sense of the container which we call space. Now the brain is the main organ, and the ductless glands and so forth also contribute to all this. The whole psychophysical organism is in interaction here. This particular finite organism, which begins, which grows, which dies, which belongs to mortality, existing within this transcendent mind, through interaction, gives rise to psyche, your individual psyche. You and I have no mind. I know it's a common phrase, my mind, your mind, people have used it through the ages, but we will find greater clarity if we just discard my mind and think in terms of my psyche. My brain, my psyche are a reality. Now, this transcendent energy interacting with the mortal, finite, ever-changing organism gives rise to phenomena, to processes, which we call mental processes. We have called them mental processes. Feelings, thoughts, emotions, and so on. You see, they are not solid, liquid, or gaseous. But electrical and chemical processes are invariably involved in all feelings, thoughts, sensations, and so on. Electrical energy, particularly, and chemical activity, electrochemical processes within the living organism are everlastingly associated with what we call even the most abstract thought. It's something thrown out by the brain, formulated by the brain. And the formulation is in the form of speech, generally and essentially, and also in terms of the different sense images, pictures, sounds, touches, and so forth. These are all languages of the brain. But every one of them is limited, finite, particular. It comes into being, passes away, it dies, belongs to the realm of mortality. Pure mind itself remains untouched. We live and move and have our being within transcendence, but we cannot catch, we cannot hold, we cannot smell, we cannot taste transcendence. But transcendence through us sees, touches, smells, tastes, and so on. So you see, all the time, the brain, the psyche, ignorant of the reality, the fact, the absolute supreme fact of transcendent mind, the creative energy, eros. That's the true meaning of eros and Sanskrit word karma, the god of love. Ignorant of that, psyche goes milling round and round within space-time, within ambivalence, within the realm of opposites, because differentiation, measurement, belongs to this realm. This is better, that is worse. This is bigger, this is smaller. Transcendence, which is beyond space-time and all that, has no measures, absolutely no measures. You see how difficult it is to be a brainy person, think about these things, and imagine we fool ourselves, imagine that we can grasp these things by concentrated, applied thought. Nothing of the sort. With concentrated, applied thought, you can get to the moon. As a result of all that the brain can invent, you might even grow wings and fly to the ends of the universe. But you'll just come back home for dinner quite tired and worn out. Transcendence you didn't find, because you tried to find that which is eternally itself, the Absolute. That's why I say over and over again, go and find space. You're in it. You can't find space. You can't put a label or make a fence around a bit of space which you say, this is my space. There's no such thing. Now, all very fine philosophy, or hopelessly rotten philosophy, depending upon the kind of way you listen to these things. But where is the practical application of all this? And how does it work where the meaning of meditation is concerned? Let me suggest an analogy first. Some great conductor is going to conduct a symphony. You and I are the audience. If we do want to listen to the symphony and enjoy it, we have to be quiet. It's the conductor who will conduct the orchestra, and the symphony will sound and pour forth its beauty. Now it's not a bad analogy. The brain has to be quiet. It has to be still. It has got to be choiceless. Because the brain receives every single impression from outside as well as what wells up from inside in terms of memory, desire, and so on. But is your brain, is my brain, quiet and still and choiceless in every situation? Throughout the day, throughout all time, it isn't. If and when it happens that it is choiceless, then suddenly you are in complete tune with the symphony of eternal life, of creative activity, of the transcendent. Then you are not making a disturbing noise to mar the music of the eternal. If it happens to be so, but can you make it so? You may say, well, what is the use of trying to make it so? If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, well, bad luck. The brain, and generally speaking the organism, the psychophysical organism, is the indispensable instrument for transcendent mind to come into full manifestation of its transcendence in terms of the meaning of the word man, the human, the happy, the blissful creative energy. That is what you are. The blissful creator. That is why it is a task incumbent upon us. But transcendent doesn't care whether you do it or not. The meaning of the word care in this context and in all similar contexts or in almost any context is confined to the limited, to the temporal, to the mortal. That which is immortal, immeasurable, cannot care as you and I care. But you and I can realize and experience transcendental care if we let go everything, grasp at nothing. One of the Buddha's supreme teachings, Ananda, the freedom from all grasping is deathlessness. Is this transcendent real? And the whole process, whose fruition is samadhi, is the process through which the brain and the whole psyche, which means the conflict and sorrow and the play of all the forces, the opposing duels within our ambivalent being, means that all that has become still. It has become still because we let go, we don't hold on to it. Again and again the Buddha teaches how sense pleasures and the hankering for sense pleasures is the beginning of the unhappy story. And surely the Buddha wasn't quite wrong, was he? We in England enjoy understatements, so we'll put it in that form. And he taught very distinctly, do not grasp at them. But he also taught, do not grasp at sensations. Do not grasp at feelings, ideas, concepts, any sort of mental pattern, any limited particular state of consciousness, vijnana. And when you have completely let go like that, transcendence is unhindered. Now, can you deliberately let go all your conditioning? Can you deliberately let go all your ideas, your beliefs, and so forth? You just can't. You try it and see if you can. Because the attempt will be made by the limited self, functioning from a self center. This is the trouble. You can't become free of your own self center. If you do become free of your own self-center, your whole being is utterly transparent. You cast no shadow upon the universe anywhere. Some years ago, that sentence which you will find in my book, in chapter 14, at the end of chapter 14, just suddenly came like that. I am the shadow formed when the being of God stands in the way of his own eternal light. You can't get rid of this self-center by wishing it, desiring it, striving for it. Why can't you get rid of it? The whole psychophysical organism is a complex which is the product of a few million years of evolution which has conditioned us. So these things are inherent in us. When we read, when we study, when we listen to other people and so forth, and we get certain ideas only. What is said is immediately interpreted and translated into an idea according to our own mental development or lack of development or whatever it is. Our own mental constructs. We may just change our mental constructs this way or that way. But that doesn't mean that truth is realized. So we just continue to go round and round this whirligig of conflict and of suffering. Conflict and suffering because whatsoever comes, we try to hold. Ah, there's a good idea. He did say something absolutely marvelous. Now, I must get hold of that. That's exactly what we all do. I've done it all my lifetime. So I speak from experience in that matter. We hold and try to prevent the pellucid flow of universal life and energy. We don't let go. We are not at ease. We are in a state of dis-ease. So we create and we perpetuate our own conflict and our own suffering psychically all the time. Because the psyche wants to maintain its independent, separate existence. Look at the whole world. Oh, I have to preserve this image before the public eye. All the great stars on the stage and so forth. The image of Britain or the image of the United States or all humbug, isn't it? And with what avidity, with what tenacity we grasp it and hold on to it, to the untruth, to the shadow. How can we be free, therefore? And yet it is this very person who has it in him to be able to let the state of freedom completely permeate his being, and that power and beauty of freedom, and let that power and beauty of freedom spread out into his environment. So now, have we begun to get the real feel of this? The brain and the whole psychophysical organism, the limited, conditioned thing, the thing of conflict and of endless sorrow. Sorrow because this conflict within the psyche is sorrow itself. It is the me. On the one hand, that. On the other hand, the fact that this manifestation, in its ultimate sense, is transcendence embodied. And it lives and subsists within transcendence, but ignorant of transcendence. Now, ignorant in which sense? Not in the brain sense, knowing it as so many words or thoughts or ideas or pictures or feelings or states of consciousness alone. It's ignorant in that, it's ignorant in the sense that it is not itself transcendence. Knowing, the knowing which is being, is the true meaning of seeing in the religious, in the spiritual sense, of hearing, of listening, of tasting, of touching. Supposing you have the power in imagination to hold the whole human race within your attention. You see, the whole human race, at this moment, some people are sleeping, therefore their eyes are shut, they are not seeing, true, and so on. But the whole human race is seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, etc. throughout every day. Everything happens simultaneously. Now, who is what or what is the seer, the hearer, the taster? Not the particular one, but the illimitable reality. The transcendent reality is the true seer and smeller. And how does transcendence see? How is it possible for you or me as individuals to let this thing happen? We are in the state of conflict. We are in the state of imperfection. All right. Now, stay with your sorrow. Stay with your difficulty. Stay with the imperfection. Stay with it. Don't fight against it. Don't indulge it. Your imperfection may be your awareness, our awareness of all our drives and passions and so on, which cause us so much trouble in the world. Our passion to obtain power, possessions, pleasure in innumerable forms, and so forth. If you struggle with them, you're struggling with yourself. If you try to extirpate them, you're trying to extirpate the me, the you, which is the particular me or you, existent here. What is it that has to happen? Stay with it. Not saying yea or nay to it. Just attend to it intensely. Keep attending. Just keep on attending. But let it be attention, not an activity of the brain churning out thoughts in connection with what you are observing. This is the important point. This is the difficulty. When we pay attention to anything, we are talking at it all the time. You examine your own mental process in any and every situation throughout the day. We are constantly talking back at it. We can't shut our mouths. That's the supreme sin. If we only keep quiet, we cease to be self-obtrusive. Because all this chatter is I asserting myself on the environment and upon the organism too. You see? So, just pay attention and you will see this is fear. This is so-and-so. The intensity of your seeing transforms the state of the psyche. This is how the psyche is healed. If you and I do this, and if the world begins to do it, all psychoanalysts and company will just be out of business. Because nobody else can really do it for you. You have to digest your own food. The doctor may give you something to help your digestion, but he can't digest your food for you. When this happens, you'll notice an extraordinary thing happening. The brain will stop taking sides with any one part of what you are observing against the other part as being inferior or superior. It may in fact be inferior or superior, troublesome or pleasant or whatever it is, but that is of no importance. When the brain becomes still and quiet like that, and it will become so naturally, if you have the slightest desire that it should become so, you'll have half an eye at least upon the clock. Oh, when is this wonderful thing going to happen? When is it going to happen? You will just remain bound within the round of time. Time not as a linear movement or a cyclical movement, a spiral movement, but as a circular movement. You go round and round like that. The rat caught in the cage. See? So don't expect anything, don't desire anything, don't hope for anything. Don't assert with one part of the brain, this is the right thing to do and I am going to do it. Because you see, in that assertion, this very devil, the I, has stepped in. I am going to enable transcendence to function through me. The Lord God fell asleep before I was born. After I'm dead, he'll wake up and he'll scratch his head and say, did a chap called Feroz Mehta pass by? But for all he cares. Now, how important we are. That, if you really see that, we will have the soil of humility in which the right thing can happen by itself. So when this brain is choiceless and it is quiet and still, free of all self-oriented activity, it will naturally be so. And then there is no separation between self and not self, between self and a transcendent. This is the state of the union, the unio mystica. All sorts of extraordinary things do happen. There is activity, there is movement in this. And it's a movement which will release complete understanding within you. An understanding which transcends expression in thoughts and ideas and desires to do good or this, that or the other particular thing. You will live now in the immediate moment fully and completely. And if you live in the immediate moment fully and completely, the bondage of the past, the dead, is not on you. What has sometimes been called your past karma has absolutely vanished. There is no such thing as a future karma or any such thing. Anticipation, because all anticipation and looking into a future is again self-oriented and only self-oriented. Transcendence knows no past or future. Cannot. Even a really good logical intellect can show you that. You see? You'll be free of that. There'll be this extraordinary thing, understanding, which is the living child, the divine child of perfect love and perfect wisdom. And neither love nor wisdom have our meanings in that transcendent context. But that transcendence will be right here, as much here, as solidly here, as all these physical objects are. It will be as real as that. And you will know it, you will be aware of it, not by knowing it analytically, which is our usual mode of perception. All our perception is analytical. It has to be analytical. It has to be something which differentiates and distinguishes. Otherwise, you'll try to play a Beethoven sonata by stamping about in the bus or something. Well, you can't do it. That's that. So, this flower of the human spirit, the state of meditation. This is the true meaning of meditation. You see the immense implications of all this, and how easy it is to go off the rails. Perhaps that's not a good way of putting it, either the rails or the beaten track. How easy it is to miss stepping out into the cosmos. Step out into the cosmos. Let go. And this intense inner freedom will work miracles. It is this sort of awareness, this intense awareness, which is at one with this creative action in eternity of mind, of pure mind. It is this which transforms for that which is the real good, oneself and one's environment. That is meditation, the state of meditation. Not your achievement. But your freedom from grasping.